I don't know if you know this about me, but when I was taking the college entrance exams in high school, I'm one of the few students in America that aced the mathematics and science sections of the ACT. I also aced the English section, by the way. And I was offered all these scholarships to go to different schools. And I was even offered the ability to go to MIT, the MIT, but I could not afford the living expenses and so on, which were, even at that time, there was a scholarship, but it didn't cover the whole thing. And it was going to be like 50 grand out of pocket, didn't have that kind of money. So I went to universities in the Midwest and was on scholarship there for several years because of academic scholarships. And so I actually do have a really strong math background, believe it or not. And this is why I've understood for many years, and I've mentioned on this podcast, that the speed of light is not a constant. And, you know, people who are brainwashed with their government education, which is a dumbing down, even a lot of so-called high IQ science people, they say, oh, no, the speed of light is a constant. It has to be a constant. We've been told it's a constant. It's called C. It's defined as a constant. And, of course, it's a constant, blah, blah, blah. And I've said for years, you may have heard me say it, no, the speed of light is not a constant. And, in fact, when you look at different laboratories that are reporting the measured speed of light all around the world over the past several decades, because, you know, they do measure it and they report it, their numbers don't agree, by the way. The speed of light goes up and down. It fluctuates. And by the way, the way that modern science gets around that is they have a recursive definition of the speed of light. The definition of the speed of light is the speed at which a photon of light traverses 1 meter. But the definition of the meter is how far a photon travels in one particular fraction of a second. So, in other words, the definition of the meter is based on the definition of the speed of light, and the definition of the speed of light is based on the definition of the meter. And so it's all a hoax, it turns out. It's not scientific at all. They just simply stated that the speed of light is a constant. So now we know, there's been a breakthrough, quote, discovery. Well, not a discovery to me, nor to you if you've been listening. But there's a so-called breakthrough discovery, and it's been reported all over the media over the past few days in the science media. Scientists make groundbreaking discovery of low-frequency gravitational waves that create ripples in the fabric of space-time, proving Einstein correct 100 years later. See, Einstein and I agree on this point. Now, if you're still wondering what I'm talking about, space-time, the fabric of space-time, when you have ripples in the fabric of space-time caused by gravitational waves that move, they ripple like the surface of the ocean, it changes the speed of light based on the current distortion of space-time in which you're measuring the speed of light, or what kind of gravity wave happens to be sweeping through your lab or your planet at the moment you took the measurement. So the fact that this new study finds that the fabric of space-time is actually churning like ocean waves all across the cosmos. And these are scientists from the North American Nanohertz Observatory for Gravitational Waves, by the way. The fact that the gravitational waves are churning through the universe means that the speed of light is actually not a constant, that it fluctuates based on the distortion of space-time that you're currently experiencing. So from the story here, there's a news release. The groundbreaking discovery was made by scientists with this nanograv who closely observe stars called pulsars that act as celestial metronomes. The newly detected gravitational waves, ripples in the fabric of space-time, are by far the most powerful ever measured. They carry roughly 1 million times as much energy as the one-off bursts of gravitational waves from black holes and neutron star mergers detected by experiments such as LIGO and Virgo, etc., etc. You can search for the actual announcements and all this if you want to get into the science. But here's the point. Here's the point. Gravity is not a force at all. Gravity is a distortion of space-time. And so the sun doesn't actually pull the Earth towards it. What the sun does is it distorts space-time so that as the Earth itself feels like it's moving in a straight line, it's actually moving in a curve, an orbit around the sun, during which Earth and its inhabitants experience no acceleration of gravity because there is no acceleration. We feel like we're traveling in a straight line, but because the sun has distorted space-time so much, that straight line has been curved into a circle. That's kind of a simplified way to describe it. And the reason all of this matters is because you may have heard me say before that the dark side of the moon would be the perfect place to set up a gravity wave detection equipment. And why would you want to set up gravity wave detection equipment on the far side of the moon? Because, of course, their gravity wakes are moving through us all the time because they are wakes from craft that are traveling faster than the speed of light. And so there is, it's called FTL, FTL travel, FTL technology projects a very powerful space-time distortion in front of and around the craft, and then the craft moves through that space-time at multiples of the speed of light without experiencing any acceleration itself. So you don't actually, it's kind of like, remember on the Millennium Falcon and Han Solo and Luke Skywalker, and they would go into warp drive, you know, and then all the stars would go shoo, and they would shoot forth. But they didn't feel any acceleration themselves. Why? Because, well, it's the distortion of space-time rather than actual kinetic acceleration that's bringing them to multiples of the speed of light. Now, this technology exists in the cosmos, and there are almost certainly various craft cruising around our Milky Way galaxy, the spiral arms, and, near our solar system and probably through our solar system, that use FTL drives. And FTL leaves gravity wakes. Gravity wakes can be detected using this equipment. In fact, they are detecting gravity wakes or gravity ripples. You could say space-time ripples. Now, they're detecting them by measuring pulsars. Let's see. They're the most powerful ever measured. Yeah, a million times as much energy as the waves from black holes and neutron star mergers. So pulsars have very strong gravity waves. Well, if you move a craft through the fabric of space-time at multiples of the speed of light, it requires an enormous amount of energy in order to distort space-time in order to create that effect. That energy is the energy of stars. And the faster you need to move through space-time, i.e. multiples of C, multiples of the speed of light, then the more energy you need to project in front of and around your craft, making a much bigger wake. It's kind of like a motorboat on the lake. So a little tiny motorboat that's not going very fast just leaves a little tiny wake. But a really big motorboat, a super turbo boat with three engines that's going really fast and it has a big hull and everything, it's leaving a massive wake that just spreads out behind it. That's exactly the way gravity waves work, except in three dimensions, not just two dimensions on the surface of the lake, three dimensions. You know, imagine kind of like an expanding funnel behind the faster-than-light spacecraft, okay? So, if we have gravity detection equipment that is sufficiently sensitive, and the far side of the moon, again, would be a great place to put that equipment, then we could detect actual extraterrestrial faster-than-light travel, kind of like a radar system for incoming and or outgoing or craft that are traversing our space. We would be able to pick up their gravity wakes as they move through. And based on the size of those gravity wakes, we would be able to make some guesses about how many times faster than the speed of light these craft are actually traveling, or perhaps the size of these craft, because the larger the craft, the larger the space-time distortion has to be. Now, some interesting things to note about this. There would be, in advanced civilizations, there would be non-occupied craft, which would be very small little, like, drones. And these drones might be rather tiny, you know, not the size of a giant craft, but could be the size of like a shoebox or something. And it could have this advanced technology on it, and using a lot less energy, they could project this shoebox craft at multiples of the speed of light, like 100C, for example. And what might be in this shoebox? Well, it's kind of obvious, information and energy. They'd be delivering energy to other hubs, forms of energy and forms of information. They'd be delivering that at, you know, again, multiples of the speed of light. But the Milky Way is a very big thing. And even if you're traveling at the speed of light, let me look this up to be sure, but I think it would take you, okay, so, yeah, I'm looking this up just to get this right. So it's 1,000 light years thick. That's just the thickness. If you think about the Milky Way as a disk, 1,000 light years thick. So if you're traveling at 1,000 times the speed of light, it would still take you a year just to move through the thickness of it. Now, if you're talking about the spiral arms, here it is, 120,000 light years in terms of the diameter, I see some websites saying it's 100,000 light years in diameter. Okay, so 100,000 light years, if you're traveling at the speed of light, it would take you 100,000 years to go from one end to the other. That's obviously not fast enough to engage in cosmic communication and commerce and travel and so on. So you need to go significantly faster than that. If you could go 100,000 times the speed of light, then it would take you 1 year to go from one side of the spiral galaxy of the Milky Way to the opposite side, the opposite spiral arm. And that's still a pretty long time as well. And this doesn't even get you into other galaxies, by the way, which you'd have to cross this huge chasm of empty space to get to other galaxies, which can be, of course, many millions or billions of light years away. So the amount of energy that's required to traverse even our own galaxy in a meaningful way is enormous. And there's some math that you can use to calculate this, and you can actually work out the formulas of how much energy it takes to distort space-time. And you can see this out there. There's papers on the theory of warp drives and so on. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. This is all published science, by the way. And the answer is it's going to take stars full of energy with mass to energy conversion, you know, E equals mc squared. That's mass times the speed of light squared, by the way. That's what the mc squared means. C being the speed of light. So in order to think about it, in order to have an extraterrestrial civilization that can traverse the universe in a timely manner, you would need to consume stars. Stars are your energy source, at least as best we can figure out right now. So you would have to consume stars or harvest energy from stars. And I talked about this in a lecture that I gave in 2019, the Oblivion Agenda lecture, by the way. But there are certain types of stars that are giving off an enormous amount of energy, such as pulsars and, you know, quasars and what have you, that are already out there. And you can build energy harvesting structures around them to actually gather that energy, kind of like a giant spherical solar dome of sorts. I mean, that's a simplified version. You can collect that energy and you can store it in certain kinds of exotic elements that using physics that we don't understand yet on Earth. But you can store star energy in very small, a very small amount of space. Like think of in Star Trek, the dilithium crystals, let's say. And, you know, you can have a little power pod that's the size of like a mason jar that might have the energy of a star in it. And then that can be used to power ships that project faster than light travel, warp drives, so that you can move through the Milky Way galaxy at, let's say, 1,000 times C or 100 times C for the discount tickets. 1,000 times C or 10,000 times C, that might be the military craft that are expending a lot more energy because they need to get there quickly. But the point is, they're consuming stars in order to power commerce and travel across the Milky Way galaxy. Now, I want to bring your attention, if you're wondering, like, is any of this real or is this all science fiction? No, it's all real. In fact, if you go to the Smithsonian Magazine from December 18th of 2019, there's a story there. It's called A Stellar Mystery. How could 100 stars just vanish? And here's the subhead. A comparison of old and new star catalogs shows that some objects seem to have gone missing. So an international research group led by whoever from the Nordic Institute for Theoretical Physics in Sweden reports something strange in the current issue of the Astronomical Journal. They compare star maps from the 1950s with recent surveys, and they discovered that 100 previously cataloged stars cannot be found anymore. Uh-huh. So they went through more records, and they found that, according to a recent sky catalog, the Pan-STARRS data release, DR1, a total of 150,000 objects that existed in older catalogs did not have a readily identifiable counterpart in the new star survey. Even though the Pan-STARRS data release includes stars that are 5 times less bright than the faintest light sources from the past. So, these stars are vanishing, and nobody on Earth can figure out why. Well, I mean, I can tell you why. They're being used like batteries. They're being consumed as energy sources by the non-Earth civilizations that are consuming stars to power their faster-than-light travel systems. I mean, it seems obvious, actually. And if they consume stars, then it makes you wonder what happens, you know, to the solar systems where there might have been planets around those stars. Oh, too bad. Dead, cold, frozen world with, you know, flinging out into outer space. No more orbiting a star for you. But you might think, well, maybe these civilizations out there would choose stars that perhaps don't have life planets around them. That would make sense, right? If you respect life, anyway. So maybe they would choose stars or collapsing stars, or maybe they could consume, you know, the quasars and the pulsars and the magnetars, which is a type of neutron star, by the way. And they produce a lot of energy. But whatever, they're running around the universe consuming stars to fuel their faster-than-light ships or drones that need to travel faster than the speed of light. And so, ultimately, this is what's fascinating, is that as more and more of these civilizations expand across the cosmos, it looks a lot like the Western civilization empires on Earth expanding throughout the past few centuries and chopping down all the trees, for example. Or using up all the coal, right? Wherever we expand, we burn up all the energy and leave behind just a bunch of death and destruction. Well, same thing's happening on a cosmic level. These non-Earth civilizations are running around consuming stars. They are star eaters, in other words. And if they want our star, they can consume it at any time. But probably they don't want our star. They probably want our planet, because our planet's pretty rare in the universe, being that it's the right distance from the sun, has a lot of liquid water, which is, again, pretty rare. It's got a lot of valuable minerals. It has an atmosphere that's about 79% nitrogen and roughly less than 20% oxygen, a little bit of argon in there, a little bit of CO2. But it's got a diverse genetic base of plant life and so on, and it's got an orbiting moon. It's got an axial tilt relative to its orbital plane around our main star, which is the sun. And it also has a strong magnetosphere, which protects the life forms on the planet from the genetic mutations caused by exposure to ionizing radiation emitted by the local star, which is the sun, of course. And so you put all this together, you realize that, wow, Earth is really, really valuable. And if a non-Earth species was running around eating stars, they probably wouldn't want to eat our star. They would rather want to, let's say, occupy our planet. Hence, do I have to fill in the blanks? Hence the ethnic cleansing of the planet, the depopulation of human beings on planet Earth. Get it? Get it? Yeah. Because Earth is valuable because of the properties I just mentioned. Whereas the value of Earth outweighs the value of the sun as an energy source, because there are lots of other stars and pulsars and quasars and magnetars out there that they can harvest for energy, but they can't find planets like Earth very often. And so they probably want this one. And so the order has gone out to exterminate humanity. And how do they do that? Very simple. Get everybody to line up and take an infertility death shot. Exotic mRNA technology with nanotech. Huh, I wonder where that came from. Think about it, folks. This is not that complicated, actually. If you just think about what's going on and don't listen to the propaganda, it's pretty obvious. Earth has cosmic value, and there are forces that are preparing Earth for a non-human future. And I've given a whole lecture on that. It's called Oblivion Agenda. If you want to look it up on Brighteon.com, it's there on Brighteon. And shockingly, everything I talked about in 2019 is coming true, including the bioweapons depopulation agenda that I laid out in great detail before COVID, by the way. And again, if you're wondering why are stars disappearing from the sky? Yeah, they're being consumed as energy sources faster than light travel. And then now we have the new press announcement proving that gravity waves are rippling through the fabric of space-time, just like we talked about, just like I said. And if you can distort space-time, you can move faster than the speed of light. You know, relative to somebody else looking at you. You're going to appear to move crazy fast because you're actually distorting space-time. It's not wormholes. It's not black holes. It's not a portal. You're just bending space-time and then riding the bend. That's all you're doing. And to do that, it only requires projecting energy. Enormous amounts of energy, like more energy than has ever been consumed in the history of our planet. We're not talking, you know, kilowatt hours here. We're talking like the energy of stars. But that's why stars are vanishing. So, something to think about. And hey, it's okay if you want to just put that in the category of, oh, that's all science fiction. Go ahead. That's fine. Or if you want to think about, oh, that could be real. Yeah, it's fine. It's okay with me, however you want to take that information and think about it. But I've been thinking about this for quite some time, several years, and it's kind of obvious to me exactly what's happening. Earth is being prepared for a post-human future, and terraforming is taking place on planet Earth. That's what the carbon sequestration projects are all about, to alter the climate in order to make it more hospitable to whatever species plans to be here after they eliminate us, you see. That's exactly what's going on. Dimming the sun. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. So, you know, the Biden regime wants to dim the sun now. It's all official. The UK Daily Mail covered it. Let me bring up that article. You can find this yourself. Remember when they said this was a conspiracy theory? Remember that? Here it is. More gloomy news from Biden. White House says it's open to plan that would block sunlight from hitting surface of the Earth in a bid to limit global warming. The White House has opened the door to an audacious geoengineering plan. I mean, this is mainstream media now. When I talked about this years ago, everybody said, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. It's all made up. Yeah, really? No, it's called terraforming. And it's how you alter a planet to prepare it for, you know, a post-human future. This is how you do it. It's called geoengineering. It's weaponization of the atmosphere, altering atmospheric chemistry, blocking sunlight, cutting off photosynthesis. And if you don't have photosynthesis, guess what happens? You have a total collapse of the biosphere because you don't have plants. You don't have aquatic ecosystems. You don't have the microalgae. Functioning. You know, you don't have animals, you don't have pollinators, you don't have forests, you don't have humans. It's done. It's a reboot of the planet. It's like the great reset of a planet, terraforming. That's what's happening right now. And everybody that's talking about, oh, we got to get rid of carbon dioxide, they are part of the terraforming. They are trying to alter the atmosphere because, I mean, these climate cultists, they're morons, they're idiots, they're, you know, useless eaters, sheeple that go along with whatever stupid idea is pushed on them. And this idea would make Earth a frozen planet, which would collapse the biosphere, collapse human civilization, and it would ultimately eliminate humans, which is the whole point. And these stupid humans go along with it because they're just dumb as shit. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. Sorry about my language. That's just what they are. I mean, these climate cultists, it would be so much easier if they could just fling themselves into outer space and you know, save the planet by removing themselves from it. But no, they're here to destroy the planet. They're actually working, perhaps in an oblivious way, they're working for non-human forces that want to see humanity exterminated from this Earth. That's who they're working for. I mean, whether they realize it or not, that's what they're doing. So all these climate cultists are anti-human, and that they hate humanity. They hate planet Earth the way it is. They don't like warmth. Think about it. They don't like warming. They don't want a warm planet. They want a cold, frozen planet. They don't like liquid water. They want everything frozen. They're fans of ice for some reason instead of liquid water. You can't grow plants in ice. You can't have thriving ocean ecosystems if it's all frozen. These people are idiots. And they don't even know that carbon dioxide is necessary for photosynthesis. They think carbon dioxide is a pollutant because that's what they've been told by their overlords. And, you know, there are times, I admit, it is shameful to realize that we are part of a race of idiots. You know, I mean, think about it cosmically. You know, you wake up, you're like, okay, you know, we're humans here and the human race is mostly a bunch of idiots. How did this happen? How did we get here? Right? I mean, isn't it shameful to realize that so many fellow members of the same race that you and I belong to, the human race, that they're suicidal, cultist, brainwashed, indoctrinated, gaslit idiots who are committing suicide en masse on a planetary scale to help make sure the Earth is occupied by something other than human beings in the future? Isn't that wild? But that's where we are. That's reality. And these people are killing themselves with the vaccine shots, too. They keep dying off from the vaccines. It's like, man, I never would have thought that you could have just downloaded technology to some planet of a bunch of idiot bipedal organisms and get them to line up and take death shots. But they did it. They did it on Earth. We're watching it happen. It probably happened to people you know. And this is like, it's a suicide system on a planetary scale. It's unbelievable. Exotic technology, right? It's wild, man. It's wild. So that's why they pushed everything. All the world leaders, they had quotas for, you know, kill quotas, basically, for their countries. They had to kill off a certain percentage of the populations. Those quotas are still in force. And since the vaccines haven't achieved the kill quotas that they were looking for, obviously, well, guess what? They've got backup plans. They got other ways to kill billions of people. Yeah, weather weaponization, starvation, food failures, shutting down the energy supply, you know, shutting off fertilizer production, nuclear war, radiation, you name it. You know, civil unrest, economic collapse, power grid collapse. Yeah, they've got all kinds of plans. They're going to eliminate billions before this is done. Just understand that you're living in an extermination event. And you got to have a cosmic point of view to understand what's going on here. You have to understand that Earth has value beyond human civilization to understand who's behind this. It's rather evident. So think about that one for a while. Let that kind of bounce around in your thoughts and see where you want to go with that one. But we're not just at war against the globalists who are anti-human and pushing transhumanism and the Satanists, you know, and the pedophiles and the trans cultists and all that. We're at war with entities that want to exterminate all of humanity from planet Earth. That's what you need to understand. We're in it. The extermination has begun. You're watching it. And there are many people who believe that the population numbers being reported right now are largely falsified, especially out of countries like China, that perhaps hundreds of millions, even approaching a billion people, may have already died since COVID began, from the bioweapons and the vaccines. And yet there's a massive global cover-up, they say, some people believe, to try to pretend like the population is still 8 billion people. Might already be down to closer to 7 billion at this point. We have no way to know because you can't run around counting 7 billion people. You just have to depend on governments, and the governments are trying to kill everybody. So how do you trust them? Right? Think about it. Shatter the Truman Show, folks. Get out of the dome. You got to open your mind to reality here. You know, it's you're not living in the reality that you thought you were. You're under cosmic attack. The human race is under cosmic attack. And the plans for planet Earth don't include humans in the future. Just saying, okay? All right, that's enough to think about for today. I promised this was going to be short, and I guess I broke that promise. Sorry about that. But enjoy these ideas and celebrate your existence while we still have it. Celebrate the fact that we still have a planet for the moment, because it may not be much longer that it's ours. Who knows? In any case, I will be back with you tomorrow with more information, more interviews, and additional breaking news. Thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com, and also the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care.